Welcome back to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. You're in for a treat because we have a very cool conversation lined up today with Brittany Musket from Kong Australia. We're going to be discussing the importance of decompression and enrichment for our therapy dogs and how the Kong product range can assist with those activities while encouraging our dogs to express their natural behaviors in a safe way. Let's get into it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. So we've got Britt on today. Some of you will know her, but some of you won't. So I'll hand the intro over to you, Britt, for our audience.
Thank you, guys. So excited to be here. So my name is Brittany. For those of you that don't know me, I work for Kong Company here in Australia. I am the company trainer and also the veterinary BDM. So that's fancy words for I look after vet clinics nationwide. And I get around educating and helping pet parents, pet professionals and the likes to utilize Kong in different ways and, you know, hopefully get the most out of it and then make their dogs live their best lives or help their dogs live their best life.
Thank you.
Pretty good way to spend your day.
Yeah, what a great job.
Definitely can't complain. So I think my background's in, you guys would know, but my background's in professional dog training. So obviously I have that trainery spin that I love to inject into my education with Kong. So I'm fear-free certified as well and an animal nutritionist. And I'm really, really, really passionate about that biological fulfillment and stuff, that the real trainery nitty-gritty stuff. So it's always good to be able to get onto a podcast and talk about it. Talk about Kong and how we can do that.
So we had a chat a couple of weeks ago. I didn't know this, Britt, but you've got a bit of a past, like before dogs as well. And, you know, we kind of are marrying up this therapy dog stuff that us and all of our listeners are doing with Kong. And we're having this chat about like, okay, so how do we best support our therapy dogs with Kong products? What can we do? And you mentioned that you have actually got a bit of a history with social work and stuff like that, which I didn't know about.
Yeah, so I've done quite a few different jobs. It was only the other day I was talking about this with someone else. They're like, aren't you only 32? Like, how have you done all these jobs? I was like, I don't know. I like to get involved. I love the community space and I love working in the community space. So I've worked with youth at risk, doing community cultural development with drama and theatre therapy. I've also worked in drug and alcohol rehabs with people transitioning from jail and on drug court programs. And then I was also a police officer. So there's lots of different...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Lots of different aspects of community engagement in different types of ways. Obviously, the way that I was engaging in community cultural development is a lot different to the way that I would engage as a police officer. But that all being said, my passion is with dogs. And if I can help people, help people get the most out of their dogs and then work with people with dogs, like that's all, it all kind of comes in together. And so that's why the job at Kong has been hugely beneficial for me. So yeah, fits all my things into one thing.
It really is. Like it actually really is, which is,
I know.
Crazy.
I'm like, I always pinch myself because I love Kong and I've always been, I used to recommend Kong as a trainer, or you'd know, as a trainer.
Yeah.
Like,
and I recommend it all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, when the opportunity came up and I was looking and I had the little brand on my my shirt or my business card, I was like, oh my gosh, I legitimately work for Kong. Like that is,
this is real. Awesome.
I know, that's real. Like, anyway, I'm not fangirling the company.
No, I recommend Kong all the time, especially to puppies, because we're trying to obviously get them through that tricky stage when they're first learning to be independent, and we're trying to keep them safe. You know that I've got a puppy at the moment and she is a extra large breed, and I'm even finding as an example, I have like paranoia about leaving her with things, so I always supervise with stuff, but she's like the first like giant breed I've had, so I'm like, what can she actually handle? And they've got a really strong jaw. So I'm like, what can she handle? And I've been buying her these like long lasting, you know, like kangaroo tendons and stuff like that. They last like maybe 35 seconds and she's done. Pig's ears go pretty okay. But I don't think you're supposed to feed them a lot of pig's ears because of what they're made of, which is obviously a pig's ear. But it's like, have they got a lot of fat in them? Is that, I've just said that.
Think so.
Can you
I
get
think so.
pancreatitis from
It's you're just looking at
it?
rotation and variety, and you don't ever want to overdo anything. I mean, back in the day when we were like, if I go back like maybe 10 years or 10, 15 years, like remember everyone used to give their dogs only pig's ears all the time.
Yes,
Like
yeah.
it was like the thing.
It was the thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's changed a little bit now. I think it's all about the variety and the rotation and making sure we don't overdo it. But it's something to take away with what you said is that you've got a dog that like chews through things like that, right?
Yes.
Like and gets through
So
things
it's
quite.
costing me a fortune. Because
Yeah.
this is the point I'm making. These two things are expensive. Like it's like $20 or $30 for a bag of like 10 of these things. And she has multiple times a day that I'm teaching her to be by herself. So I'm trying to use the Kongs because she, it's so much cheaper. It's way cheaper to stuff a Kong, even if you bought like three cocks, I've got a couple so that you can rotate them. It's even if you bought like five, it's so much cheaper to stuff Kongs than it is to keep buying. And I'm like still obviously buying this other stuff, but if I was using that other stuff all the time,
Oh, you'd
I'm gonna go
spend,
bankrupt.
yeah, fortune.
So I think the gap of where I always start when I talk about Kong or and I'm talking about the importance of Kong is the why. Like why do we even give Kongs to our dogs? If like there are people out there that are like, I know this brand, what the hell is this brand? What are you even talking about? I think it's important. It definitely like you've made a couple of really good points, but there are also points that you know from being a trainer that you're like, this is, I want to use this, I want to do this, I want to build independence. But like a lot of people don't understand, you know, like the why. Like, why do we even do this?
Oh,
What's
true.
the point?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
like if we go back a little bit, so Kongs for different reasons. So I think the first thing is by just kind of understanding dogs and humans and how they came to be and what dogs were doing before us and all that kind of stuff. So you look at a dog prior to us and they were doing whatever they wanted. They were digging, chasing, barking, exhibiting natural behaviors, you know, engaging in their predatory drives, doing all those kinds of things that dogs just want to do. And then when we came along, you know, we were like, hey, you guys are great hunters. And they're like, hey, you feed us, so let's be friends. That's not really how evolution happened, but it's like a really easy version of it. And then we fast track today, and we've got, you know, Frenchies and Cavoodles and all kinds of dogs sleeping in pajamas in our beds. I have dogs in my bed, so I can't. I'm not like a. That's fine. No judgment there.
I'm also not against it, guys. If you've got your dogs in your bed, that's fine. I sometimes have dogs in my bed.
I feel
They're very
like,
cuddly.
yeah, Staffords are like, or Staffies are like kind of naked, almost a little bit naked because they've got like no fur.
Yeah.
And so they feel the cold. So they don't just go on the bed. They want to go in the bed. So that's like a whole nother thing. But a lot of the problematic behaviors that we see in today in everyday pet, like pet dogs, but then also problematic behaviors transferring over to therapy dogs and to other working dogs or assistance dogs are the dog's inability to exhibit natural hardwired behaviors. And that is really challenging because our, you know, dogs' hardwired behaviors or what they're instinctively designed to do, like those natural, that digging, that predatory drive, that barking, chasing, all that kind of stuff, that hasn't really changed. Our expectations of how we live with dogs has. And so that's where we fit in is because we're a tool to aid in behavior management, not just that, but provide dogs with that appropriate outlet. So like you said, it can start from right back from puppy. The goal, if you can get a puppy onto a Kong straight away, you know, that's fantastic because not only are we encouraging appropriate chewing outlets, but we're also creating that independence that you were talking about. So that's super helpful. And then, you know, you've got other dogs that like just say the normal average pet dog, we have to provide ways to give them an appropriate outlet for those behaviors. And if we don't, guess what? they're going to do it anyway. So yeah,
the furniture.
The furniture, scavenging in the bin, you know, using that great nose of theirs. And if we don't give them a job to do, per se, then they're going to go self-employed.
And puppies are curious. So, like, I can watch Kiki through, like, the whole side of my house is glass, basically. I can watch her through the doors and windows. And she's just looking for things to interact with. And I give her, pretty old school. Like, she has palm fronds, dead palm fronds, and like bottles, like plastic bottles and stuff. They're her favorite thing, and sticks. They're her favorite things. Then you can see she's going, and she's just looking for something to do. And then she'll pick something up, like a bottle, and then she's off and she's running, and then she's thrown it, and then she's trying to catch it, like as it hits the ground, but she pushes it, and then she's jumped on it again. Things like that. But that's what the Kong does. Mm. Like, the Kong interacts in that way as well. It bounces and things, and she can chuck it. And yeah, it's, she hasn't, I don't know if this is an Anatolian thing, but she can't handle, she hasn't had much frustration tolerance with it yet. So I can't like fully stuff it. I might get some stuffing tips off you.
Yes. That's actually a really, really, really good point. So, like, going back to what you said, yeah, it is all those natural things that you just talked about. It is really more than just a toy. Like, I think sometimes when we see something on the market, it's you think, oh, it's just a dog toy. Like, how can it do all those things, mm-hmm. you know? Well, it is more than just a toy. There's so many different things that we can use this for. So environmental enrichment, you've got dogs that are in the backyard or in, you know, suburban backyards. The average suburban block these days is ridiculous. It's like 405 big.
Yeah.
It's got color bomb fence and just grass, nothing going for it. And there's lots of stimulus going on. So most people live like that. And that's just the reality of us being in, you know, highly populated areas. So we can use stuff like this and hide them around, or, you know, create places for them to go, like in little nooks and crannies and stuff like that. Things being in there. The other thing too is, like you said, a fetch toy. So, interesting fun fact about Kong. Are you ready for it? So it took them 20 years before they started stuffing them.
What?
I know. 20 years. Not 20 days, not 20 weeks, not 20 months. 20 years before they were like, hey, we can put something in here.
No.
I'm not kidding.
Oh, so, my goodness.
When was Kong established?
So we have been around.
The 1800s?
Close. So the very first Kong hit the market in 1976. Now, have you heard how, like, where it came from?
No.
It's super interesting. I'll just tell it. So Joe Markham, who's our founder and still with the company today, he had a retired police dog called Fritz. So he basically had an auto mechanic shop. It kept getting broken into. He enlisted the help of this German shepherd. So he got, like, he didn't have it existing. He got like a retired police dog. Mm-hmm. Now you can imagine a German shepherd that's gone from, you know, tracking and biting and doing working, like what we're talking about, working dog roles.
Yeah.
And now just sitting in an auto mechanic yard. Well, what's he doing? Like, so he started chewing on rocks and metal car parts, which is like,
oh gosh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really going to grind down those teeth. And it's a choking hazard. So anyway, Joe one day was working on a V-dub combi van or bus. And there's a suspension piece called the bump stop. Now, I'm not a car person. I don't really know all these things, but it looks a lot like this.
Oh my God.
So pretty much he threw the bump stop over his shoulder and Fritz started playing with it and started chewing on it. It bounced. It was all unpredictable in its bounce. And the love for the rubber kind of happened. And the shape hasn't actually changed, which is super interesting. The thing I love about it, it's like, did that really happen? Yes, it did. But the thing that I love about it the most of all things is that it's not like some guy that woke up and was like, I want to be a millionaire. I want to make dog toys. It was just like this guy that had a problem with his dog and he just needed to have a solution.
Solved it. Yeah.
I love that.
I know. Mm. And it's about solutions. And then like the whole company has been about solutions. So that's what, like, we're a solutions-based company. So it's
love it.
Rainbows and sunshines, like, story, but it's legit and it's real. And Fritz is real. And it's like, there's a big, he's obviously not around today, but he's, there's a big, like, photo canvas thing in the USA in the headquarters.
Well, who's on the thing behind you?
Oh, but, no, that's not Frizz.
Is that
that's
a different dog? Okay, I can just see the ears.
Dog. No, that's just a dog. Yeah, look, I could almost like. I just saw my double chin. Cut that out.
Oh, no. My God, if you're listening to this, you have to go to the YouTube and watch.
And watch in slow motion of me.
Watch Brittany wear these dog's ears on this poster board.
Anyway. It's a shame it's the wrong one.
I wasn't prepared for that.
Anyway.
That makes me want to put like a Zoom filter. Is there a Zoom filter where I can wear a dog thing? And why have we never done that?
Oh, so we all just have dog faces.
That's hilarious.
No, I'm just having a look. You can't.
Damn it.
Anyway, I'd have cat whiskers just to be different. No, so that's now I can't stop looking at these ears. They're like right there. Now.
Wait.
Hang on, let me sit up.
There are some animals on this. Is this a dog or is this a bear? Oh wait.
Oh gosh.
Is this a dog?
Yes.
Anyone still listening? Sam's just put on a bear filter.
It's a bear.
Definitely okay. A bear.
How do I turn it off?
You can't. It's staying on there now.
Like that forever.
So going back to
it's a real dog.
That's how to the real dog story. So yeah, that's how Kong started. So it's we get puppies like going back to again a back because we're diverged. So it's more than just a toy. So it's that unpredictable bounce. But yes, it took them 20 years to realize they could put things in there. So initially it was marketed as a fetch toy because it is really unpredictable. You throw it and it like you don't know which way it's going to go. So there's that. Then we also look at going, okay, well, it's a great chewing outlet. So apart from getting stuff out of here and it being a problem-solving toy, it's a great chew, like great option for dogs that have that real chewing motivational desire. And then ditching that traditional food bowl and making dogs work for their food and problem solve versus, just eating out of a stainless steel bowl. But on top of that, how many people have really highly intelligent dogs that, they go, oh, you hear them and you see them. They're like doing 10Ks a week, 10Ks a day.
They're
physically trying to exhaust their dogs. And it's just not happening. Like,
no. Just gets fit.
Yeah. Just expect it.
Everybody gets super fit in that scenario. So it's not a bad thing. But if you want to satisfy your dog, you're going to do it way faster by mentally tiring them out. And I always use the example of like, I can run around like a chicken with my head cut off and organize a bunch of things and whatever, and I'll be fine. I'll do that all day. But you get me to sit down and do my tax. I am like 2 hours. I'm like, I am exhausted. I cannot do this anymore. I have to like go away and like think. Not think about it, go and watch some reality TV show. So challenging the dog's brain is going to be super helpful because it's going to tire them out mentally. And then finally, I guess, apart from ditching the food bowl, like weight management, looking at options for weight management and slowing dogs down and portioning. And so it's more than just like, oh, I go buy a toy from a toy shop. It's got so many different uses. And I think the one that we are going to talk about a bit more is about decompression for our working or therapy dogs.
Yeah, definitely. Because I do want people to understand that's like what we're getting to. We're not just like Sam's got a puppy, let's talk about Kong. It's about looking after our therapy dogs' mental health and well-being because we want them to have long careers in the job. If you guys have started, especially with a young dog, or you're starting with a young dog, especially because you're trying to set them up for a lifetime career as a therapy dog, hopefully. But even if you've joined the game a little bit later on in the dog's life, that's fine as well. I definitely am finding, so my younger lab who's 4, she needs quite a lot of stimulation. And it is only becoming more obvious to me as like I've been letting my client hours gradually fall back because I'm busy doing other things. But I'm seeing it in this dog. Like, oh my God. So I didn't realize
how much she needed it.
Yeah. Like she's so enriching and stimulating to her. And I first noticed it, which I think I've discussed before, but when I have school holidays and I work from home, I don't go to the clinic on school holidays. So I don't see psychology clients on school holidays usually. And she'd just be like, she'd be difficult to manage for me with her energy levels and things like that by the end of the 2 weeks if I just haven't realized like, oh, she actually needs quite a bit because I'm still working during that too. Like I'm usually online working, running courses and stuff. So she's not getting as much an enrichment as what she would with her and I seeing a day of clients.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely seeing that. Whereas I haven't had to like compensate for her in that way before. But also, so there's that side of our dogs, but then there's also that side as well of how do we have the dogs have a letdown? Like how do we, yeah.
And the other thing too is that often in assistance roles or in therapy roles, and I say them both, they're obviously different, but in roles where they've got a purpose for people, the challenge is a lot of the time as well, the natural behaviors that the dog exhibits, we aren't necessarily tapping into those behaviors when the dog's in therapy role or
So there's a lot of impulse control involved in those roles.
Of course. And it's mentally tiring and they've got to give a lot and give a lot emotionally and physically. And so we see them like tired from that regard. But as far as like natural behaviors of like, you know, yeah, we might have, let's just speak, or speak specifically for assistance. And I know that this is different to therapy, but like for assistance roles, you know, the dog might be indicating on something, or it might like for a medical alert dog, or it might use its nose to do things. Now, yes, in theory, it's using its nose, but it's using its nose in a very specific way. It's not like going, okay, you can just go and sniff and get lost with your nose, or you can, you know, chew and have that outlet. Like, so there's a lot of times that whilst the job is fulfilling, we still need to provide those natural hardwired behaviors and outlet. And that's where Kong kind of fits in. Well, not kind of, does fit in. So
can we think, like, does that make sense if we think about it? Like, it's like a self-care
thing, I would
for
say
these dogs.
Yeah. I would say it is a bit like a self-care. Like, there's lots of different ways. Like when you've got, it's such a, it's so versatile. So when you've got a dog, for example, that, you know, in these roles and is, you want a decompression. So what we're doing is we're the dog finishes their day or whatever they do, or they have their routine where they go in their crate and they have some downtime that's like for them, you know, putting their food in here and getting them to, even if you work up to freezing it and making it more challenging, which we'll talk about how to progressively do that. But the licking and that's all calming behaviors. They're all behaviors that are going to calm the dog down and bring the dog down to base. Now that can be used as like a downtime decompression thing. Like, hey, you just do this. This is your thing that you do in your crate. Here you go. We can also use it to build independence. So if we go back to starting with young puppies, you know, allowing the puppy to have adequate time on its own and then giving them something constructive to do while they're doing that, you know, whether they're in their pen or whatever, is a great way. The other thing too to think about is I think where this can be useful is that these therapy dogs still do need that play outlet. They still need that play where that tug of war, where they're chasing, it's all heightened arousal. But if we leave our dogs in that state and we don't provide that window of opportunity of going, hey, this is when the game starts, this is when it ends, which is super important for therapy dogs so they don't have crossovers in their work. What we can do at the end is go, hey, instead of saying finished, okay, you're still left on cloud nine, let's actually bring you back down to base and bring your energy level back down and create the routine that we rise you up. We get all the out, you can rest or we can do whatever between the start and the end cue. And then at the end, you go on your bed and you go and do something constructive, which will be a Kong. And then it's not only have we physically tied them out through play, but then we've mentally challenged them as well and brought them back down. Now, I look at that play routine.
That's like a regulation tool, really.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, they start associating the Kong as their
coming
signal.
Back down. Yeah. Mm. And quiet time. And then suddenly it's like every time I lay on my bed, like I'm doing this low, like this real short activity. But you think about it from like it makes sense from like a pet dog perspective too. Like you think about a normal standard pet dog as a trainer And one of the things that we say when people come over, your dog's in a heightened state of arousal. Okay, yeah. Before the people come, put the dog in a place, whether it be a crate, on their bed, whatever, and give them something like this to distract themselves.
Do, yeah.
To come back down to base. I use this in clinic, in the veterinary clinic. You know, get the dogs doing something constructive whilst we're providing this, the vaccinations or the titer test or the care or whatever they need to do. Get them licking and engaging and taking the food out and whatnot with this to keep them focused on a task that's going to lower their arousal and like nervous system and just bring it back down to base. So you can
Is the licking something that does that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, licking. Yeah. Because you notice licking and sniffing and all those types of behaviors, it's a like a calming, it's a self-soothing response. That's why you often see dogs that are overwhelmed, for example,
nose
to the ground, straight away nose to the ground.
Yeah.
Or you often see dogs when they're in a particularly anxious state or in, you know, they'll start licking themselves and grooming.
Yeah.
Themselves.
Yeah. Like a displacement behavior.
Mm. Yeah. But it's a way that, scientifically speaking, it's I don't know the actual, like, I can't the actual thing, but it's licking is a calming behavior that they do to calm themselves down and to just,
there you go,
yeah,
that makes so much sense.
It's like a
nurturing, it's probably like a link back to when they were puppies, you know, like that licking and like a soothing.
I should find the actual scientific statistics on that.
That's amazing.
I've got it somewhere, but I don't know it off the top of my head. But yeah, it's a natural, releases endorphins and it calms the dog down. So
wow, yeah. I've never thought of it like that, because Dougie's terrified of the vet, and we try and work on it all the time, but trying to find like a tool like Kong or something to use to kind of encourage him to be like licking or something when we're just waiting in the waiting room.
We've got the Kong licks as well. And there's, I should actually see, I've got it in my,
like, actually thinking about going, okay, how do I get my dog licking to start signaling them to calm down.
Most people don't realize though that when we've got such a, and like this is obviously a different topic, but when we've got such a huge response to the vet clinic, this conditioned response, it starts way before we even get to the clinic. It's the car ride to the clinic. All the different factors. But the Kong licks is the new, we've got, this is new, that's out last year. And there's a little one and a big one. Now that it comes with suction and it's pretty thick, you can see.
Yeah.
So what I like about the little one for trainers is like, hello.
It can fit in your hand.
Yeah.
And it fits in your pocket. So you can put things like the Easy Treat or whatever, or the peanut butter, our Stuff and Fill peanut butter, on this, and you can actually get the dog engaging with it, and you can use it as a lure as well, like it's a hand targety lure thing, but then it gets the dog engaging in that licking too.
That's smart.
Brilliant. Absolutely, I know. Brilliant.
Guide dogs are using this as they've started to use this. I went and did a training session with those guys and they were like, oh, how good is the little one for a handheld? I'm like, I know, very good, very trainery.
It's like you could do a lot of work on your loose leash walking, I reckon, with something like that.
Yes.
And the cool thing is, it's like, I think the suction is like the best ever, because suction, things with suction are so underrated, and I just love it. I just, like, you can just stick it. I wish I could just like
there. Like the nails.
Oh my god, it's so Yes. It's like a Kong unicorn.
I am a Kong. Anyway, so you know how you see those videos of people doing the nails with the peanut butter? Why do you need glad wrap? Just put a Kong licks on your head. It's actually like legitimately stuck. So there you go. That speaks for itself. It just stuck to my forehead. It's like the suction is unbelievable on it. It's fantastic. It's like
funny.
It's like really hard. Anyway, so
I like that it's hard, because I've tried lick stuff before, and I think that sometimes like that wobbly stuff, it's a bit tricky to work with. But
The great thing too about it is that like groomers, like grooming as well, So all part of necessary care. I use this all the time with, obviously I've got a Sheltie. So, well, one of my dogs is a Sheltie and we do regular nails, maintenance, all the rest of it. And yeah, the Conglix has been, when it came out, I was like, oh, need to have in my life. So
I just want to go back to our decompression thing. Cause so one of the things that I'm hearing people that are training, got their dogs in training, and they have kids at home. The kids are like revving the dog up, going full noise, and then they get sick of the dog because it's jumping on them and biting them. And then the kids are off it. So the kids are like, get away, dog. We're not playing with you anymore. But the dog's like fully amped. So, and then parents, it's hard because you've got, you know, three kids under the age of six or whatever and a dog, and they're all ramped up. And now we've got to try and, make everybody happy, but separately. This is sounding like this is the time that you could have a Kong ready to go. Like I'm rotating. I've got a couple, so I'm rotating mine. So if you've got a couple, you can have one ready to go. And then when the kids just crack it and are like, get rid of this dog, it's jumping on me, you could just give the dog a Kong to help calm the dog back down. Because I think it's unfair that the dogs are then like in trouble with the kids and then they're just getting like, you know, put away without having that help to calm back down.
Yeah. So the key concept that we have is the keys three. So you're pretty bang on. You're like all your, so you could unofficially work for Kong technically because you know all the things that you didn't even know that you know. So we recommend that every dog have at least three Kongs. And the reason being is that you've got one Kong in the dog's mouth for now. Mm-hmm. You've got one Kong in the dishwasher being cleaned, and then you've got one Kong in the freezer.
And Kongs go in the dishwasher?
I knew you were going to ask that. And look, I've even come prepared to show you a Kong.
Oh, my God.
So hang on, goodness.
I've been soaking them because Kiki, the loser, she doesn't empty them out because she's like such a sook with her frustration tolerance. That is amazing. I've been soaking them.
Really helpful.
Let's just talk about this. Firstly, another thing that was released, and it was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Oh, I like it as well for the other side of it to pack it, help pack your food in it. I know, genius, right? So, okay, so Kong cleaning brush, or you can just use a toothbrush, whatever you want to use. But the brush, the little cute, firstly, my little OCD just goes wild. It's in the shape of a Kong.
I know, that's very cute.
I know, it's so cute. Anyway, so there's that. And then the flip of it is that, yeah, so dishwasher safe, top rack only, just turn that last little heat cycle off, and you just keep it on for wear and tear. But, yeah, you can still soak it. So how I clean my Kongs is that I have a lot of them, of like, obviously.
Yeah.
And I do like a stuffing night. So it used to be when Married at First Sight was on, and I used to go on a Sunday, and I used to sit there and watch trashy TV and pack all my Kongs. But now that's a bit more sporadic. So, and I don't have that show anymore. to watch Below Deck or Love Island.
Oh my God, I have been watching Below Deck.
Best show, eh? Do you love it?
I've seen it. I've watched two different. I don't know how I found this show. I never watch reality TV ever.
Get involved.
But I found this bloody Below Deck show. It is hilarious. I've followed up. I've like Googled the people and been like,
I followed them on Instagram.
Are they still together?
So just a side note on that, my husband's like, oh, he's like tried to, I was annoying him. And he's like, oh, put this on. And he's like, go and watch this. And he thinking I wouldn't take to it. Next minute, I've watched every season. It's like 9 seasons or 10 seasons. I've binge watched the whole thing.
I binge watched a whole season. Like I was like stayed up until like 3 o'clock in the morning and was like, I just have to find out what happens.
Like Max is like, what is going on?
For me, I binged F-Boy Island that came on binge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. That was a great one. Absolutely brilliant.
So going back to cleaning our Kongs, routine is important. I do like a whole night of I pack all my Kongs and then I put them in the freezer and then I have like I obviously rotate them through and I soak them as I go. But then I do like one day a week, I'll do like a dishwasher specific to my Kong, my rubber Kongs, and I put them all on the top shelf and they're all, I've partially cleaned them out with a brush and some dishwashing liquid. if you don't have a dishwasher, it's totally fine. You can go back to the old school way. When I lived in the country, I didn't have a dishwasher, and I used to have to do the old school way with a little brush and some soapy water, and then rinse them out. But yeah, if you go through like with the concept of the keys three, going back to what you said, that's a great time to implement. And it's an easy double up. Like, just feeding your dog out of a bowl is a hugely wasted opportunity. So if you've got kids in particular, I would be stuffing Kongs left, right, and center. And the reason being is because I can use it as like a kids are out the back going nuts, let them do that. Dogs inside not going nuts with a Kong. Kids have played with the dog. Dogs had this great time. Dog needs space from kids and needs to come back down to earth in your crate with a Kong. Or dinner time. Dogs.
Yeah.
Hovering around the table, great boundaries, get the dog in the crate or in the space or whatever and use a Kong. And it's great. And you can use the dog's daily allowance. So you don't have to, when I think about stuffing these, I don't think about just going, so there's lots of different things that you can stuff it with, but I don't just think about going, oh, I have to use treats. Like, think of it like you use the dog's daily food allowance. So, and that's so versatile. So if you're using kibble or you're on like a specific kibble or whatever, you can use the dog's kibble to stuff it with. And what I would do is I'd soak the dog's kibble and then put it in there.
It's so better if it's a bit softer.
Yeah, so it's mushy. So, or you can soak it in bone broth or whatever.
I've been using this new yogurt that I found. It's like this probiotic lactose-free yogurt that I found. I've been using a bit of that.
Yeah, you can put that in there. You can put lots of foods are safe for dogs, but you can use, so if you're using wet food or canned food, you can use that. If you're using raw food or fresh food, you can use that as well. I use, you know, different commercial raw products and I put it in there and then I freeze it. And then the goal is obviously, so the goal is that you want to, over time as the dog solves the problem, you're going to make it harder for them. Now, when you start out, like you said, with your puppy, they don't have that, like, I need to do this. And what happens is a lot of people go wrong in the introducing stage of a Kong. So what they do is they just give it to the dog, they stuff it and give it to the dog, and the dog has no idea what they're doing. And if they're not a confident dog and they're not a problem-solving kind of dog, then they don't problem-solve when it rolls around. The other thing too is that a lot of dogs, people put in a couple of, like, the way we recommend to introduce it is you put a couple of pieces of kibble or Ziwi Peak or whatever you're using in there, and you want the dog to have quick success.
Yeah.
So you want the treats to come out, you get quick success. Now, where that all goes pear-shaped is when you start using wet food, because wet food doesn't come out easily.
No.
So what I recommend for people to do is to, if you've got a big dog, you can do this. Or if you've got a little dog, you can put it in your hands. But otherwise, you put the Kong in between your knees and let the dog eat it at eye height. And then you put it on the ground and put your foot on it and let the dog work out that, and then you let it roll around.
Okay.
Yeah.
The goal is that we don't want to go straight to university. We want the dog to have success. We want the dog to get enjoyment out of it. So if it means you need to encourage them and help them along the first, you know, the first couple of times, then that's what you need to do. As time goes on, you would pack it harder, and then you'd work up to eventually freezing it or sealing the end with like peanut butter or whatever, tahini or coconut oil or whatever you want to do, and then working up to freezing it. And if your dog's a superstar, massive superstar, and they're like, this is so easy frozen, go and get like a little ice cream container. You eat the ice cream out of the container.
Win-win.
Put the Kong in the container with like bone broth around it and then freeze the whole thing. So, and then give it to them.
Sucked in, dog.
Work on that. Cop that, border collie. Cop that.
Take that, Kelpie.
All the border collies, the border collie audience is just like, why?
Oh, funny. When Sunny was a baby, so he's 12 now, every meal, I had four Kongs. Every meal was his raw, I used to make it back then completely incorrectly, which I found out after. Anyway, you couldn't really buy it then, but anyway, it was stuffed. So he had two Kongs, big ones, stuffed with frozen, and I'd go to work and give him his Kongs every morning and every night. That's what he had, because he was an only dog as well. So with getting more dogs, I don't feed them all their food in their Kongs now because it would take forever for them to eat it, and we've got stuff to do. We've got fun to have. But and I don't like to leave, like, you know, I'm leave that for work with all my dogs with Kongs, because I don't want them to one dog to eat all the Kongs, which would be Nala. That's, that's what I was gonna say. So with Labs, they took to it so easily. Like, they were really fast. The progression was really, really quick. With Kiki, Anatolians are, like, famously, like, so chill and also not super food motivated.
Yeah.
So she's definitely, I'm like, what is wrong with this dog? Like, she's just like, listen, no. But I did find, I've got a bag of that, Eureka, which is like Zeewee Pig. And so that definitely worked a lot better for her because she could get it out.
Mm, yeah.
Because in your head, I'm like, it's not really stuffed because it's like, it will just come out. But, like, for her, that's what she needed.
That might be the challenge for her.
Yeah.
And what we often find, there's a couple of different things that I think about. Dogs that don't really want to problem solve, you've got different variants of that. So you do have breeds, you know, like your breed, or even, you know, Huskies or Malamutes or things like that, that a couple of things about them, they are seasonal, as in their diet changes seasonally depending on, you know, the weather, depending on like, you know, if you've got dogs in heat or other, you know, bitches in heat, and you've got male, like intact male dogs that go off their food. So there's all those factors, but then the key sort of points are, introduce a Kong when the dog's hungry, so the dog isn't full and you're not, you know, the second thing is that if you have an all-you-can-eat buffet, kibble buffet left out all the time, get rid of that, because it changes the dog's relationship with food, and they're like, oh, I don't really want to work from it when it's
not
like
really high value.
And so there's some things. And then the other thing too is, if you've got a dog that's not particularly like food, you know, you can also look at layering each like little bowl bit, each level, with a different type of recipe. So
great idea.
Make up different recipes, and then you can layer it, because then the dog, like, so for a dog that's like gets over stuff really quickly, so maybe for your puppy.
Dougie's a bit like that too.
Yeah, so you can have like something sticking out, you know, we've got, you know, the different sticks or snacks or Ziggies or whatever to go in there, or alternatively you can use like, you know, a dehydrated treat, like the chicken breast, whatever. And then so the dog eats that. And then they get the first bit of food and they're like, oh, okay, what's this? And they start going through. And then as they start getting over it, there's another of something in there. So you might use, you know, some roast chicken or whatever you want to use. And then the bit that's like the best food maybe might be at the bottom. So then they can.
They have to really work to get down to it.
Can their tongues reach the end?
Well, I would say so, because they can get it out. So
Sunny, do you get the That's size I mean. Of the Sunny Kong can always... based on the tongue size too?
No, it's not the size of the tongue, it's the size of the dog's mouth. So there are a couple of factors.
Those are probably related.
So a couple of different factors to go into picking the right Kong. So what I might do is this is like going to be show and tell here to be helpful, because visuals are good, except for if you're
Sunny always got everything out of his Kong, but he is literally like, he would throw that thing against the side of the house. Like, he would be like, it's me or you, Kong.
Yeah,
like,
Dougie wouldn't care.
Like, if he yeets this thing, like, and he's like aggressive about, like, give me your treats, Kong. I swear to God, give it to me. He'll stop at nothing. If you give him a food puzzle, you know those like Nina Ottison food toys?
Yeah.
He like picks it up and yeets it. And he's like,
same. My dogs are like that. I can't do those things anymore, because they put their paw under it and flip it upside down.
Yep.
And then they're like, and then push it out the way. And I'm like, come on, man.
It's this thing's getting, or like a paw on it, and it's getting yeeted back behind them across
there
the room.
There are no obstacles.
Max into something. And I'm like,
here's another one for you. This might be, okay, so I'll go back into Kong size in a minute.
That's a good one. I've got that. I love that.
I've never owned a wobbler.
It's so good.
I've never fed kibble. What are you putting in there?
Zeewee Pig. Good.
Yeah.
Just break it up.
Yeah. No, because it comes out of the hole. It fits.
Okay.
It fits. So this is the baby one. 100
would probably fit in there if you cut it up.
And if you really are really, really like, you've got a complex about fitting it in the hole, get the cat version of Zeewee Pig. It's tiny. It's like, anyway, not required. It does. I use ZBP can hear and it comes out.
Oh, it opens. Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah. Okay. And so. Sorry, I can't hear you. So, okay. The next thing that's really useful about this, if you're a wobbler person, you're like, yeah, my dog's so good at it and does all these things really good. I'll show you what you can do. You can get the dog's treats. You scrunch that piece of paper up and then you put the treats in there.
Oh, my God, that's genius.
Brilliant, because Dougie's very good at that.
Boom. That's how you genius. Make it harder.
Oh, I'm going to do that.
I've seen dogs use wobblers before. They love it.
Yeah.
So, but it depends. So, like, dogs eat Kongs totally differently and dogs do this differently. So I had a Labrador that had a ball patch on its head from smashing the Kong wobbler.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I know, they're nuts. Or you've got a dog, if you've got a dog that's particularly hands up, pory or handsy,
that's Dougie. Really
good for them because they can like knock it and do that. We've also got the gyro or the gyro, which is like looks like a satin type thing and they roll it. And so dogs with their heads, they can roll it. Yeah, really good problem solver. I'll show you that one.
That might be a good one for labs.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So same thing, that opens, it unscrews. But like when it comes to sizing appropriately and those kinds of things, there's all different ways that you can dogs Kong at all different ways. So like my border collie, so my Sheltie will hold it like this in between her paws and lay down and eat it with her like just licking the stuff out. My border collie lays on her back and shakes it.
Oh my God, that is genius.
I know, so intelligent, but also so annoying.
Yeah, completely.
My Stafford used to like squash it and throw it and chew it and like bang it against things and
loosen everything
and
out.
And step on it and stuff. And that's like that compression, right? Is it's going to loosen up the food in there. So
That's why I wondered about the tongue, because I was like, I don't know if he's ever had to. I think he just squeezes it out.
So there's all different ways dogs, you know, eat it and whatever. And you can modify what you put in there based on that. But the key thing is about selecting the right Kong. And this is the thing that a lot of people do correctly. And it's just that it's an education thing. So there's different colors. Right. See if I can. There is different colors.
I didn't know there was a. What's a purple one for?
I've seen the purple
you're
one.
I'll learn some things. So
It's a little Therapy Dogs Australia colour.
Yeah, I know, I was just about to say.
Look at you getting all excited. Yeah. All right. So do you guys know what pink and blue are?
Were they puppies?
Puppy, yes. So puppy, this is designed for our needle sharp teeth to penetrate it. It's our softest rubber. So with our puppies, we don't want something that's going to be too hard because we don't want to damage those pathways. With our puppies, we also don't want something that's too soft like this, because then they're just going to shred it like soft toys. So we want something that's going to be just right, which is why we call this bad boy a Goldilocks.
Cute.
I know, right?
And it's puppy boy and puppy girl. Is that where they're? Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Whatever.
So that's how I've been using them. So just checking. Kiki has two large breed puppy pink. She's a girl.
I comment nothing. I say nothing. Anyway,
you get cancelled all by myself.
Okay. Notice how quiet that was.
Lower volume down. Okay, so this is your favorite color, Kong, because it's the therapy dog color. Yeah, Therapy Dogs Australia color. So this is our senior Kong. Now, I know you don't often see this guy out there. A lot of people are buying toys for their young dogs, so you don't often see this out here, but it's the same rubber grade as the puppy. So you can still provide a senior Kong to a senior dog with the puppy rubber if you can't find the senior. Now, key information about the senior Kong, it's gentle rubber again. It's the same rubber grade as a puppy. It's designed for, say, senior dogs that don't have a lot of teeth, have dental surgery, that kind of thing, and they want that kind of softer rubber. But key note here is that all these different, like this rubber is our most softest rubber. So it's designed for gentle chewers. So if you have a dog that's an older dog, you don't necessarily need to think, oh, my dog's an adult dog, I'm only going to get them the red Kong. You can I've got dogs walking past my house like hearing it. So you can also provide with this gentle rubber to an adult dog if they're a soft chewer. So the soft chewers would be the kind of dogs that like suck toys in their mouth. They like to lick or suck on their toys. They don't really destroy toys, that kind of thing. But yeah, so that's for that. Then we've got red. Most people know red. It's for our average chewers. So it's more durable than our puppy or our senior. And it's designed for those dogs that, you know, our average chewers, they probably destroy soft toys, probably like to chew on shoes, that kind of thing. These guys, light to moderate type chewing. Then we've also got our black extreme Kong. Now, this guy here has, have you guys heard the rumor that it's indestructible? Have you heard
that?
Okay, yes. It is not indestructible. No toy is indestructible. Really important to get that across. This guy is our most durable rubber. It's got thicker walls, so it's increased surface area, which I'll explain why that's important. But this is for our, like, really determined, motivated power chewers. So there are rubber types. Now, key things about all this, right? The dog... We don't just assume that a dog, say we have a Staffy or a Bull Arab, we don't just assume that they are a power chewer. So breed and size alone does not determine chewing temperament. What determines chewing temperament is, you know, that kind of develops as the dog gets older. So, and we can have a look at how the dog chews on things, but a chewing temperament is the dog's ability to apply heavy compression coupled with the motivation to do so. So even the most gentlest dog in the whole wide world could still destroy something if they've got the motivation to do so.
Yeah. Right?
So all that being said, how do we size appropriately? So what we want to look at is the last ring of the Kong. We want to make sure that can't fit in the back of the dog's mouth, because if the dog can get that thing in the back of their mouth, right? I don't think you can deal with that one. Right, then it's a choking hazard. So what we want to make sure is that we size appropriately so that doesn't go in the back of the dog's mouth. Now, there's going to be variances to that, because you might have a dog, for example, that is what we call a destructive chewer. So they're the kind of dog that likes to pick little bits off. So like Foxies, Jack Russells, Daxies can do that sometimes. Or they like to put the toy in the back of their mouth and just clamp down, and that's called scissor biting, right?
Okay.
So when you've got those chewing styles, you want to move to black rubber. And then move to our extreme, but then we also want to supervise and make sure that we're picking appropriate size. Now, there's one last thing I want to show you, because I think that this is a great visual. So if you're listening on the podcast, I'm really sorry, go to the YouTube video to see this. Okay, so this is our biggest Kong, which is our XXL, and this is our smallest Kong, right? So what I want to do is I want to show you the compression. Now, I'm going to apply compression with my hand. I'm very weak, so it's just like... Okay, so pretend this is the dog's mouth, and I'm applying that compression down. Now, you can see we're getting that compression. If I go to do that...
Yeah.
You can barely do it. Now, for the biggest Kong. Now, the reason is that it's not because these are different rubber grades. It's red. It's the same rubber grade. The only difference is the surface area. So when we've got an increased surface area, it makes it harder to apply that heavy compression, which is why we say more surface area is going to be more suitable for those real determined destructive chewers and bigger dogs, because they're unable to apply that heavy compression. Right, which is going to contribute to destroying the Kong. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's helpful. Because I would have just assumed it was the rubber and then the size, and, you know, like, that makes way more sense to me.
Well, I think it's about picking the right kind of Kong for the dog to get the longevity out of it and make sure the dog enjoys it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you just assume, like, if you've got, say, for example, in the USA, our law enforcement dogs use Kongs regularly. So they use it as a reinforcer, but they also use it in their kennels. Now, on the road, they use the black Kong as the reinforcer. You know, when they're on the road, they get reinforced with their Kong. But when they're in their kennel, they reached out to us and said, hey, is there something that we can do to get the dogs to engage with the Kongs more? And we said, hey, have you actually considered the rubber grade? Maybe they don't want to apply constant compression.
They're not like highly aroused.
Then maybe they're not, maybe not in that zone. Maybe they just want to, because remember, it's the ability to apply heavy compression coupled with motivation.
Yep.
The zone, they've got the motivation, but when they're in their kennels, they don't. So maybe they need something that's softer. So a lot of the enforcement Malinois are on the puppy rubber. Which is a bit cute because it means like they go out and they're all bad and tough bodies.
Yeah.
And then they come back and,
they want their puppies.
Oh, that's funny. I don't think any of the people I know who own Malinois would admit to that.
Neither do I. But the thing is, you know, the key takeaway though is that we have all around the world, we have working dogs utilizing Kongs as a part of their life. Like, and this is our top, like, enforcement dogs are some of our top working, like, the demand on them is so high, and we're still utilizing and tapping into different ways to satisfy those natural instincts, even though they get, you've got the best job, they're, you know, biting people and like,
yeah, they're satisfying instincts doing their job as well. Yeah.
We're still giving them those outlets, which is super important.
So important. So I want to circle back to that because we've discussed like a couple of the different types of Kongs and different types of uses. So for our listeners and our therapy dog teams, I guess if we think about which times to use Kong as a play thing and which times to use Kong as like a calm down thing. And do we think like the working dogs, do we think that they need to use a different type of Kong for those different things? Or is it going to be based on like the dog's natural, like if your dog loves the wobbler. So what I'm thinking of is you're at work, you either work at a school, you work in a clinic, whatever. So if I think about my work day, I've got a lunch break. We take the dogs for a walk, you know, that sort of thing. I'm not sure then if I want my dog to be, if I'm going out for the walk and that's her time to go and stretch her legs, maybe I'm going to use a decompression tool when I get back. But for some people, maybe they actually need to do more play, like maybe that their lunch break they actually need to do a lot more play for their dogs because their dogs are not playing so much in the sessions, like they're having to use a lot more of their arousal impulse control to you know, keep it cool because your client group is whatever needs that from the dog. So maybe people just need to have a think of it and experiment with a few products and see what their dogs enjoy and then see what works best for their dogs throughout the day as well.
Yeah, I think it's a great question and I think it's individual dog dependent, but a couple of key things that I'll say is that one of the questions we get asked heaps is can all dogs play with every toy? And I'm going to ask you that question. Can all dogs play with every toy?
Mine don't. So
I don't know. And they don't. I don't think Dougie would. I think he has the ability to, but he wouldn't want to.
They've got like four legs and a mouth.
Yeah.
And eyes and a nose.
He wouldn't be interested in everything. No.
So the key point is that are all toys made the same? And no, they're not. So there's obviously different toys to tap into different drives and different behaviors and things like that. So, you know, we've got soft toys, it might be beneficial for tug of war. We've got the snuggle toys, which might be like toys that, you know, dogs just chill out with. I'm just trying to find, I have this awesome, it's a snuzzle. It's the cutest thing you've ever seen in your whole life. And my Stafford used to just like hold it in her mouth and go and lay down with it.
I love when dogs do that.
Yeah.
So, but then occasionally she'd go like around a tree and you'd hear it like,
should she hump it?
No, she'd no. How dare you? No.
Sunny had a favorite gorilla he would carry around and he loved it. And then, but then he'd be humping it. And I'd be like, what is the relationship with the gorilla exactly?
Dougie does that with his favorite teddy, but in the evenings, usually play related though.
Yeah.
No, he was
satiating some drive.
She was killing it. That's what she was doing.
Oh, in private.
But in private, taking it behind things and killing it. But
so sinister.
It is so sinister. But like the question we get asked is like, so are all dog toys the same? No, they're not all made equal. They're all different. So you've got toys for different purposes. So you've got, when you want to tap into the dog's thinking brain, you know, puzzle toys or using the Kong, that's going to be a great option. You're going to be playing tug of war with toys that are probably like, you're not really playing tug of war with this. Mm-mm. So you might use it for fetch and stuff. I think the key like takeaway with this is windows of opportunity, because what we really need to establish as owners and trainers and whatever is windows of opportunity where certain things happen. So a lot of people have issues with, oh, okay, I just played tug of war with this and it's a soft toy. But now my dog is, like I said, all pent up and then goes and destroys it. Well, when we have a window of opportunity and we're supervising appropriately and we're recognizing our dog's arousal levels and what our dog needs in that moment, we then take that toy away and we go, okay, we use this for decompression. So I think what you'd need to do is look at your dog's day and go, okay, after therapy work or after working with clients, what does my dog need in that moment? Maybe your dog just needs a walk and a sniff. Maybe they need to go in their little cage and their little like den and go and engage with this or with this. Maybe they need to come out and they just need to like, holy cow, I've just spent the last half an hour being all like impulse control-y or people around me, maybe they need to get it out. And then that's where the tug of war might come in, or maybe the like a fetch option might come in just to get that like, exercise out. So I think it depends on what the dog needs at the time, but windows of opportunity are important. Supervision is important, and managing your dog's play sessions is going to be critically important. So yeah, the answer is, can all dogs play with every toy? Yes, they actually can, but it's like, I mean, whether they want to or not is a different story. Mm-hmm, but, you know, people that have those power chewers or whatever, they're like, my dog can't play with a soft toy. My dog can't play with this. They just kill it. Well, because that dog doesn't understand the window of opportunity and you're not necessarily reading your dog in the appropriate way to understand what their motivation is at the time. Because
right.
Heavy compression coupled with the motivation to do so is can destroy anything or can whatever. So we really need to think about taking every, you know, every time our dog engages with something or is around a stimulus or whatever and go, okay, what's my dog's motivation and what do they need in this moment? And then we adjust how we do it, how we play, how we engage with our dogs in that time.
I think what's, we're learning from this discussion is tapping into like one of the things that I talk to our teams about is just becoming an expert on your own dog.
Absolutely.
And I just think it's super important. And I'm talking to people about, you know, if you're becoming a therapy dog and handler team, you're now becoming a professional dog handler.
Absolutely.
So a part of your job is handling a dog. So to be able to do that in a way that A, honors the dog and, you know, looks after the dog and that sort of stuff, but B, like as a professional, you know, you want to be professional in that. Know your dog, really get to know your dog. And it looks like this is just another way, like to really like, you know, experiment with these tools and like make it important to yourself, really.
100%.
Like, you know,
That's where like I talk about a lot. Kong is a tool to aid you with that. Like it's just another tool in your toolkit. You know, I know when back a while ago that when as a professional trainer we used to engage in therapy dog work with our own dogs, myself and you know, my business partner, and we would be in like real high need environment, like you know, so special schools dealing with a lot of kids on the spectrum, you know, a lot of auditory. And visual challenges, disabilities, and that sort of thing. And so the toll it took on the dogs was a lot. And we had very small working windows of opportunity. Then with huge amount of decompression. So where we might spend, you know, in total 45 minutes in a school, but then the dog then spends 2 hours decompressing. Yeah. And what I mean by that is we used to go to like a local park or a local like river or creek or whatever and let the dogs go bananas, let off some steam, get that physical exercise out, play tug of war with the dogs with, you know, with a soft toy. And then the dogs would all come back and we would go and sit at a cafe and have a coffee. We would have our decompression moment, have our coffee and our lunch and whatever. And the dogs would get the Kongs while they're tethered and chill out. And so that was part of our routine. It was like, you know, the dog's done all this work and now we need to give back to the dog and fulfill their emotional needs and fulfill their biological needs. And tapping into natural behaviors to do that, if that makes sense.
I think it's really important to remember that because the dogs, like, so that type of work is like, it's a high workload for a dog.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the dog though, when they're there, they often look fine. Like they enjoy it, you know, they're interacting with people. They might do a few tricks or, you know, whatever, like, by all intents and purposes, like we're not putting our dogs in those situations and, you know, watching them lip lick and yawn and paw lift the whole time. Like we're not idiots, but the dog looks fine and the dog probably is fine. But I think that like burnout or like trigger stacking is something to really keep in mind about. It's fine that the dog looks fine now on Tuesday and you might just drive straight home and you got something else to do and you just put your dog back in your 100 square meter yard or whatever, like that's, yep. And then Wednesday comes along and you do another visit to some, you know, a dementia ward where there's lots of, you know, unpredictable stimulus and the dog looks fine and blah, blah, blah. But that's, we've stacked that. So
it's an emotional toll, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So over the course of however long, yeah, the dog looks fine and the dog probably is fine, but they're fine until they're not fine.
Yeah, and that's right.
Yeah, some dogs are going to give you more warning and more of a window of, you know, they'll get lethargic and things like that. And we can really, we're always looking for those cues, like, you know, like the, what we're trying to figure out what is this dog's window of tolerance for a visit of this nature. And then we need to, you know, leave before the end of that. But I think what you're describing in terms of all that enrichment, the decompression, you know, tapping into those drives, that sort of stuff, it's so important to make the time for this stuff because 100%. If you don't, the dogs are stacking. And so it's exactly like a human that ends up with burnout because you just haven't been able to return to a state of, you know, relax or calm or, you know, we call it with dog satiation, you know, like you just haven't returned to that state of equilibrium or whatever it is that, you know, however people relate to it. So that's all good, but we don't all have time. Like, you know, you might be working from 9 till 5 and it's winter. And so, you know, you're not stopping at the beach. I used to work all the way down at Palm Beach from Brisbane. And yeah. I was at a school, so it would finish. And then I'd take the dog to the beach after the school and let him, you know, swim in the beach and then he'd go the drive home and then that'd be it. So, but we can't always do that because we're not finishing work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in summer. Like, you know, we can't go down to the lake every day and blah, blah, blah. Like I didn't even let my dogs out to the dam that's in their yard every day. So I think that's where these tools, like, yeah, the dogs are just being dogs, but I think that's where these tools can really come and play a part is because 100%. It does actually take a bit of the load off. Once you've figured your dog out and you know that, you know, you've been watching Below Deck and you've stacked all your Kongs up and they're all prepared and you've got your wobbler and you've got, you know, your treats ready and, you know, you've got all that stuff. You've figured out what the dog's routine with this is. You've spent the money. It's going to take a little bit of the load off of our handlers as well, because you can get home at, you know, I get home at 6 on my clinic days and it's dark and I have to feed livestock and things like that as well. So I'm just lucky that my dogs get to run around and, you know, play and stuff like that when I'm doing that. But if you don't have that kind of situation and you can get home and you've got this stuff, you've got a plan and your dog's got access to ways that they can fulfill these needs themselves throughout the week, I think that's I think that's really going to be a game changer for a lot of the dogs that we have, the teams that we have, and how long they can be therapy dogs for, and what kind of workload they can manage. Because we actually do get quite a few teams that have this idea in their head of what they're going to do with their dogs, but they have to cut it right back because they can tell that the dogs are fatiguing, or, you know, they're less interested, or, you know, that sort of thing. And they might only have Saturday and Sunday that they can dedicate, you know, like, I'm going to take the dog down to the beach or whatever. So I think, guys, if you're really serious about working your dog in a therapy dog career, I think it's going to be very wise. Jump on the Kong website or go down to whatever pet shop and have a look at this range. Is the range, I know I've seen wobblers everywhere. I've seen the different size Kongs everywhere. Is everything just everywhere, Britt?
It really depends. So it just depends on independent retail stores. Typically speaking, you will get your core range, which is our rubber range. That's where I would start. I would start with just implementing that into your dog's lives. And then you can slowly, you know, different stores will have, or different independents will have different things, and Pet Barn and Pet Stock will have exclusive things, or, you know, and different things for them individually. And then independents have, individual things too. So it just really depends. You know, you buy online, you can buy from somewhere reputable, and, you know, support whoever you want to support. But yeah, the biggest thing that I can say on that, and the human example of that, is when, you know, you're talking about human burnout, right? If you like think of us humans, if we just like neglect our self-care every day and we just work, say we work solid for a 10-month period, it gets to the end and we're feral, and then we just want an annual leave block of 3 weeks where we don't do anything and we go to Bali and just basically lay there like a pancake. Now, sucked, because number one, you need that rest and recoup time, and you can't go and explore the land, you can't go and be adventurous, can't do all the things that you need to do because you're so burnt out. Yeah. Right. So think of the same with our dogs. Like, what does fatigue look like in our dogs in terms of like burnout look out like for our dogs? So if you're doing that regular self-care, you know, whether from a human perspective, you know, whether it is that you're meditating or going to that yoga class or going to the gym or taking that walk with your dog, or, you know, doing those things in your life, you know, doing your skincare routine, whatever it is that you need to do, if you're doing that regularly, when you do get your annual leave block, I don't know about you, but we book in things and we go do things. Like,
yeah, you've got some
energy. You can enjoy it.
Yeah. So like in particular this year, like self-care has been somewhat important to me, more important than other years. And we just went on even though we were overdue for a holiday, we just went on a road trip, you know, into country New South Wales. We just drove for like 7 days, and like we were like exploring and doing all these things. And it was because we had been managing ourselves to that point. So we weren't just like cactus for 2 weeks, like, or for a week, you know, we were actually out exploring. So translate that to dogs and what that looks like for dogs. If we are not providing those basic outlets to tap into their natural drives and those decompression moments for them on a regular basis, it's like you said, it's going to build up. And then what that might look like is it might look like a thing of reactivity, or it might look like, I'm not tolerating this anymore, and the dog puts the brakes on. They're like, I don't want to do this anymore. Or it might look like a lack of confidence, or it might look like an appetite change, or it might look like,
or like gut health stuff as well.
Yeah. Gastrointestinal, or it might look like a dog stops using their brain when they're exercising or having body awareness and they have an injury. There's all these different ways that it can manifest, or they can destroy stuff or whatever. That's when we start seeing that problematic behavior. Problematic behavior is not exclusive to, you know, to therapy dogs or to assistance dogs or to whatever. It's all dogs. All dogs will exhibit that problematic behavior. And I air quote that, because it's not really problematic. It's just the dog wanting to exhibit natural behaviors.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important to do it regularly and to make it part of your lifestyle, make it part of your routine. And if you're not tapping into your dog's drives, you will see problematic behavior at some point, because the dog will want to exhibit those drives whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
The other thing that actually comes to mind is putting that sort of routine in place and treating the Kong as something that signals to the dog, this is where you can calm down now and decompress and switch off.
Absolutely.
The thing that also I imagine would come in would be quite helpful with therapy work is when you have like a really tough day and like maybe something's happened with a client where, you know, a kid's flying off the rails for whatever reason and it's an incident, maybe nothing terrible, but just out of the ordinary. And then to be able to bring in the Kong to go, hey, back to that like calming state now, like could probably be really helpful.
It becomes a conditioned response, like it, like over time,
much faster way to recover.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you might find even like that can then translate. This thing now means, this Kong now means this calm, soothing moment. But this doesn't just always have to happen in the crate in the bedroom. You might be able to take this to different places and different parts of the life. Like, you know, maybe it's the back of the car. Maybe, you know, maybe it's the vet clinic. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. I don't know. But that conditioned response can then translate to different environments and generalize in different environments. So
it could be really helpful.
Yeah. So that's
when you're out of routine.
It's a tool, right? It's a tool.
Yeah.
It's just a tool in your toolkit as a handler, as a pet parent, or as an owner, whatever you want to call yourself. It's just a tool. It's just something to help better your dog's life, essentially.
Sometimes when you have a day, like, or I can have even just one client in a day, I guess like something to remind people of, and we do talk about this, but when you take your dog to work in these types of roles that we're in, so if you're a therapist of some sort, or, you know, you're providing human services to, you know, vulnerable populations of people or populations of people with challenging behaviors and that sort of stuff, there is a thing called, like therapist burnout, basically, to simplify it, where, we can get shaken by stuff. Like there's 100%. Sometimes things that happen that people disclose, or sometimes for me, it's not even like someone's sad story. Sometimes it's like a really, like I find some interactions, whether it's with a client or a parent or something, quite personally challenging. So I might get triggered by something that someone said that they're working on. So one thing that can happen is that your client brings up something that is going on for them, but you know that you have that in your past or going on for you, and you have to work really hard because you're being present for them and you're doing all your, you know, therapy stuff, but trying to keep like a complete control over your personal biases and your, like, what are your thoughts and feelings about this versus, you know, like what we know from like scientifically backed therapy modalities that we're supposed to be using, we don't provide therapy based off of our personal experiences with life. But that takes a lot of like personal control and self-control, and it can really fatigue you. Like it can be really absolutely. Or you get triggered and that's fatiguing, you know, like that sort of stuff. And we have strategies to look after ourselves. Like we get regular supervision and things like that from, you know, more senior therapists and blah, 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 blah. That's all fine. But I try to explain to our therapy dog handlers that you've exposed your dog not only to this situation, but to you being distressed. And that's something that is going to put a load on the dog because they're your dog. And the other thing that can happen is that you can be less emotionally available for your dog as well, because you need to be emotionally available for yourself. And until you can find a way to meet your needs and your dog's needs at the same time. So I've got a little routine that I do at the end of sessions like that with my dogs, so that I can get us both back on, you know, like back on a new page for the day. Like we start our day again, basically. And I'll run my next session late. Like I'll just, people will have to wait until we've done that, because there's no use starting your session until this is done anyway. So we just do this. But I think the Kong can be a really useful way, Kong or whatever, can be a really useful thing to have to include in your routine with that stuff as well, where it is like a signal to the dog that, hey, we're having this time. And either, you know, if you're still figuring out it's actually not easy to figure out how to look after yourself emotionally in situations like that.
Yeah.
So if you, especially if you're an early career therapist and you're still figuring that out, and sometimes you don't even know what your triggers are. Or sometimes like you might be an educator and like everything's just shit and the kids are just out of control and, you know, it's just shit.
It's one of those days.
It's just one of those days. Yeah. It's not anybody's fault. Like it's just a thing and it's just, we have hard jobs.
Yeah.
So if you're still figuring that stuff out too, like, yeah, let's be aware that the dogs are going to be impacted from that. And let's have these things ready to go. Like, let's have a toolkit ready. Like I'm lucky I'm in private practice. I've got a cupboard where my dogs, like I've got things like this in there for my dogs that I can pull out. But let's be ready with stuff. It's nothing to, have a Kong with some stuffing stuff like peanut butter or whatever. Like you can put that in your drawer, you know, like you can have that in your AAT toolkit, ready to go. And then if you have to do something like that and you know, like, I just cannot with this dog today. Like I need to deal with whatever's happening for me, or I need to deal with this situation that's occurred or whatever, but something's just happened. And now, you know, say like if you're at a school and something's just gone down and you just got to chuck the dog in the crate because you've got to deal with something, but the dogs doesn't know that. Like they don't know, they just know that you're upset and now they're in their crate by themselves and there's been no decompression time for them. Whereas if you've, like Britt's saying, if you've conditioned them that the Kong is, hey, everything's okay, this is, you're cool, everything's cool, I'll be back, I just got to go put this fire out, you know, and then I'm coming back and then we can do the rest of our routine or something like that. I just think I'm all about longevity with this career, with these out there. I want to look after our therapists too, you know, let's look after our therapists and our educators and let's look after our therapy dogs.
Mm.
Something, I can't remember where I read it. I don't know where I saw it. I can't tell you. But one of the things that I saw that's a part of a routine that in particular my husband follows. So he's a firefighter. And anybody working in emergency services probably has this because they are exposed to, you know, things that they're not exposed to the best of things. If they're emergency services.
Exactly.
They're first responders. You know, whether it be, you know, I know when I was a police officer, it's, you know, maybe you're not dealing with nice people or whatever. Anyway, you're exposed to that stuff. You come home and you have a shower. Like you just have a shower and you wash the day off. Like that concept. Now, when you've got a dog that's like, you've got in the car, say you've gone and done work, you're exposed to that kind of stuff, and you're just like, I just need to go home and have a shower. And your dog's like, I am home, I am ready, we're going for the walk, we're doing it. And you're just like, I can't deal with you right now.
Yep.
I always have Kongs for that. Always. Yeah. I always have it because there are times when either he might get home and I haven't seen him all day, and he and I'm like probably like that, like, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
I'm working from home today, I'm so excited, I haven't had any human interaction all day. And he's like, hey, I've just like put out a structure fire, I cannot deal with this. And the dogs are like, hello, and everybody is just like level 10 and he wants to come home and have a shower. So when we recognize stuff like that, that's where Kongs are really great, because then instead of my dogs going hanging off the wall, going, dad's home, mum's home, this is like the joint time that we do this walk thing and we're going to go run a mark and whatever, I go, hey, go and do this thing for like 20 minutes as a minimum and let us decompress.
Give
us a moment.
For me, it might be go to the freezer and go and get an ice cream.
Yeah, say, what do you stuff your Kong with, Britt?
Yeah, that's right. Go and get an ice cream. I know. Go and put it on the licks and just start looking at it. What do humans get for this? Do you know something really funny that we can often do is that whenever we're doing training, like pay for university animal studies people, like to get the concept, we put M&Ms in here.
Amazing.
And skip and let them like, anyway. Whatever, off topic.
That's because haven't shown them that it unscrews. We don't know about that.
You're the only person that did not know about that. Everybody knows about that. It is universal. We all know it. Kong's in over 80 countries. Damn, and it. Let me tell you, everybody knows about it.
That's not a surprise.
Anyway, so hopefully that lightened up. We got a bit intense there, didn't we?
We did
get a bit intense, but it's true facts. This is a fact of life. Yep. If you're working in these kind of roles, you've got to look after yourself. And I dead set use this as a way to decompress for the dogs, decompress for myself, my time to get the dog doing something independently that, you know, when they need me and I can't be available, that's there.
Yeah. And I think we need to talk more about how every single dog owner is not going to be emotionally available for their dog all the time when their dog needs it. Just they're not available for their children. Like, parents aren't available for their kids. So
100%. You know, we're not even like I think we need to normalize dogs having independence and being able to exhibit natural behaviors to them in a constructive way that doesn't involve us all the time. And that's where I think great for that.
Yeah.
Because we can, you know, we can provide that calm to them while we have our downtime or while we, you know, do what we need to do to make sure we're okay. But even you look at even when you're sick, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when you're sick.
You can't get out of bed.
And you're
raining, raining for days and days.
That is your lifesaver. You're like, go do this in the yard. I am going to quietly die over here.
Yeah, exactly. So, yep. It's like an iPad for kids.
It is.
Exactly.
Not, I don't.
Much healthier.
Advocating
more healthier.
iPads as biological fulfillment. Anyway, that's a moral and ethical debate that we, again, cannot right now.
All right.
No. Anyway.
Thank you so much, Britt, for all your insights on Kong. It's so helpful. And it's
so
helpful.
So good, yeah.
For us to talk to someone that knows their stuff as well, you know, just to help us bounce these ideas around, and we're always trying to find what else can we do for these dogs? What's the secret to this? What is the secret to this? And how do we get that information out there so that we've got teams that are, you know, reaching their full potential and enjoying it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a great thing for everybody when it's a great thing for everybody. So
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Britt.
No worries. So just as a little extra note for people, if they want to get in contact with Kong, they want to reach out to Kong, whatever they want to do. So if you're looking for recipes or anything like that, you can jump onto our Kong website and you can actually look up the Kong cuisine. There's tons of different recipes. You can even submit ideas for recipes.
Amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, super cool. And then again, if people are interested in, they've got consumer inquiries or whatever, again, going through the website contact form is going to be the best way to go. I'm sure if people want to get in touch with me, they can reach out to you guys and you guys will pass that on. But otherwise, if you're in a vet clinic, and you want to start, you know, utilizing Kong, or you want your clinic to utilize Kong, again, you can reach out to me as well. Otherwise, it was an absolute joy being on this podcast. I love it.
Great chat.
I feel like the people that listen to it on the audio are going to need to go back to the audio. There are a lot of weird things that occurred.
Things that we just can't explain. You just have to see for yourself.
And you can also see the Kong colors and all the stuff, and my demonstrations and all that kind of thing. So, get on and get involved.
Yeah,
you'll learn once and for all how that bloody wobbler works. It screws open. Mystery solved.
Go and buy one.
I actually think Kiki will love it. So Anatolians are a handsy breed. They are actually a handsy breed.
Get involved. Yeah. And Max, you can put paper in your one.
Yes. That's going to be brilliant. Wise. I'm going to report back.
Let me know how you go.
Thanks, Britt.
No worries.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia, or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.